Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owens.
And I'm DT.
DT, along with me in Blacken Studios.
We're back one more time.
One more time. It's exciting.
Getting closer to our event.
Yeah, we're getting closer.
I'm getting excited about that, man.
I am too.
It's going to be a great time.
Getting out there, man, with our listeners.
Right.
And having them give some input. It's just going to be a blast.
Yeah, we actually appreciate the dialogue that's been going on our Facebook page. We're going to actually open up a discussion board for our website.
Absolutely.
So you guys can go there directly and interact with us and talk. And
Keep it up. And before we get into that, because we've had a very vibrant discussion, ongoing discussion on Facebook, we promise you, and see, when the One Mic, One Voice show, when we promise you something, we deliver.
That's right.
And we talked about having a theme song for the show.
Right.
And it is done.
So we got some content for him today.
Oh, we got some content for him today. Listen, folks, let me tell you something. Hey, we have Josh K and Leah Marie out of Chicago, and let me tell you something. Josh K is a bad boy, multi-talented, great voice, great creativity. And, of course, I got to take some little ownership in this.
Uh-oh.
Because Leah's my daughter. You know what I mean? And she's a triple threat.
Yeah,
actress, dancer, singer. I put another entrepreneur. I mean, you know, I could just keep going with accolades. Matter of fact, we could spend the whole show me talking
See,
about
look.
How dangerous she
that's
is.
One,
right?
of, one of those parent things. Huh?
That's right. That's
on.
Right, man. And she's beautiful. And they have gotten done with our theme song. And guess what? We want you to sit back and check it out and tell us what you think.
Change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
What's going on in the world today? Tune in and take a listen. One voice, we on a mission. We gotta stop the violence and stop the killing. Cops turning blacks like we don't matter. Problem at the problem and we need us. We gotta speak up, we gotta set standards. We gotta protest, we need to make banners. What's your thoughts? Tell us your ideas. What's your thoughts? Express your opinion. You can be the one to make a difference. You can be the one, it's your decision. You can be the one, it's up to you, you gotta choose. All we gotta do is stay together. We gotta treat our women better. Teamwork, make the dream work. I'm sick of seeing RP painted on the front of a t-shirt. Instead of talking down on the next man, give him a hand and help him get back up. We gotta stop the hate, we gotta stop the hate and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You
You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mind, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mind, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world.
It's your choice.
Oh, man. Hey, we've been jamming in
fire.
The studio here.
Hot
oh,
fire.
Man. Is that on point?
Man, it embodies everything that we talk about, everything that this show is designed to do. It's a hit. It's a smash.
It's a smash. And the thing, and I liked how you said that, because we didn't give him any, like, you know, coaching.
Right. Didn't say, I mean, this is what you need to say.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just off the premise of what, you know, the show is, that cat was talented enough to put this together, and he did a beautiful job.
He exceeded my expectations. And Josh K, Leah Marie, oh, man, they're a dynamic duo, too. Okay, because they're making things happen in Chicago, across the country, and you know, I couldn't be more proud of them. But folks, we have a theme song, One Mic, One Voice. It encapsulates who we are, what we are, what our mission is, and we couldn't be more happy with that. With that, we're gonna take a break, and we'll be right back. DT, this segment is being brought to you by Selfie Moon. You know, we take those pictures, right?
Uh-huh.
That, you know, they all dark, man, and you can't even tell who you're trying to find the light, or you might even be in a, you know, I ain't gonna even say in a club, because I, you know, but you might be in a club, let's say.
Professional events, right?
Exactly, right? And you're trying to get that one picture, man, capture that moment. Well, listen, Selfie Moon is what you want to buy, man. It goes right on your phone.
Okay.
All right, man. It's
a
brand
new perfect lighting.
You can get the perfect lighting. It's a brand new product. Folks, go to theselfiegods.com. That is theselfiegods.com. And guess what? When you buy one of those Selfie Moons, you're supporting the One Mic, One Voice show.
Uh-huh.
A little bit go back to us so that we can continue to do what we do.
Thank you so much.
Hey guys, my name is Jeremy Burudi. I'm from Africa, in a country called Kenya, in a city of Mombasa. And Africa love the One Mic, One Voice broadcasting. Keep it locked. Love you guys. Cheers. I'm out.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscience. You know, today's show is something that we kind of hit on last show that we had to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we couldn't leave this thing alone, and we've been dealing with identity, but the question came up was, do you really know who you are?
The thing to me is that who is really prepared to answer that question, you know, in real honesty and openness, and having an idea of what it is about yourself, aside from all the influences that we get, is you.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, who can answer that? But on surface, it might seem like a silly question.
Right.
You know what I mean? What you mean? I don't know who I am. But we're talking about peeling away the layers of who you are, and getting down to kind of this independent agent. Do you know who you are? And DT, let's like put this in the larger context in which the American experience has happened. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know, just talking about from the beginning, you know, we know about, of course, you know, the indentured servants that came over here. But we're going to move through that period, and we're just going to talk about slavery and how Africans were brought to this country. But let's speak about the disunity among Africans.
Even in Africa, are you speaking about African-American?
Absolutely. Even within Africa.
Yeah, because there is divide, you know, everywhere we see people struggling to identify or be able to define that we disagree on, or going to try and work together to solve. Even in Africa, there are people who are struggling with that. And being there, I was able to see, you know, with the tribes and everything, the differences that they did have, legitimate differences, you know, not just because that's the way it is, but, you know, these people had legitimate differences. But the holistic look of it was like, man, you guys are arguing over ideals, over opinions, over these little things that are on the surface level very small in consideration to what the bigger issues are.
So you have the difference on the continent between tribes, of course, not just ideology as you spoke about, but between tribes and also between clans. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when they came here, right, they brought that difference with them.
Right.
Okay. They didn't speak the same language, many of them. They were enemies, many of them. And so they were brought into this American experience here. And out of that grows this thing called the Black community. Mm-hmm.
Because you said something a few episodes ago about us never really having a unified front. You know, Black people never really being totally unified. And everybody have this dream now of wanting to, you know, come together, to rally together, to be a community. And it's from the base, I mean, from the very beginning, though, that it hasn't been that way.
Absolutely.
So where do we start?
Yeah.
What's the framework in which we can use to be able to build up a community, to be able to build up a sense of togetherness based on these principles that we all agree upon?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's probably another episode. But no, you're right. You know, the disunity continues to this day. And so with the American experience, we have we had slavery, which bred disunity. And then we had what happened to the Native Americans, right?
Right.
I mean, that's crazy when you think about the cultural assimilation of Native Americans. I mean, this happened between 1790 and 1920. This was an idea of George Washington and Henry Knox, who proposed that, you know what, we need to basically strip them of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We need to take away their religion. We need to acculturate them in a way that westernizes them.
Mm-hmm.
So they outlawed certain religious traditions that they used to have. They set up schools where their children were mandatory for their children to go to. I mean, you know, and the amount of land they took from them was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted land back, you had to be in this particular system of acculturation.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this onslaught on Black people. You have the stripping of Native people's culture and identity. And just think about what they did to the Japanese.
So then think about going back a little bit to what you said about the Native Americans being assimilated into whatever American culture was at that time, to already have your own culture and then have it taken from you. So to already know who you were and then somebody else give you an identity, how does that make people, you know, how do you adjust to a society like that?
You Kenta Kunta now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to give you a name, matter of fact. What was your name? Toby?
Toby.
Oh, no. Okay, he was Kenta Kunta, right? But your name is Toby, right? So I'm going to give you a name. So you don't even have the power to name yourself. Mm. Okay, as you said, how can you script someone?
Yeah, like I had a foundation of myself.
Absolutely.
You know, I had a thing that helped me cope with life and to feel alive, to feel like a person. And then
absolutely,
you come and tell me that ain't right.
Absolutely.
And that the way I've been doing these things this whole time before I met you.
Exactly. Before you came along, I existed.
I knew what was going on. I knew myself.
But now things are
and
much
then,
different.
And it's funny because now that, you know, we've kind of been opening up this conversation, it shows us that all of us have been dealing with identity in America. Mm. It's not just the Blacks, not just, you know, Native Americans. Like we talked about, the Japanese even experienced some time in our history where they were put into these internment camps.
Mm.
Anybody doesn't know what internment is, you know, the imprisonment or confinement of people, commonly in large groups, without trial. Collins English Dictionary, as the term is especially used for the confinement of enemy citizens in wartime or of terrorism suspects. So during World War II, the Japanese were identified as possible terrorists to the country. And so they put these people in camps to be able to, you know, keep them from committing terrorist acts, or, you know, pretty much providing an extra security for America and its culture.
But think about it, right? Think about this idea of relating it to today, in a sense that all Muslims, we want to get them out of the country. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, or we want to patrol, as Ted Crazy has said, Ted Cruz, right? We want to now beef up security in their neighborhoods. Mm. I mean, it's along the same vein. We want to target you because somebody that looks like you or somebody that believes like you is an enemy of this country, when we are a country of immigrants, right? It's a crazy idea. It was crazy then when they did it to the Japanese, but we see that even playing out, DT, in modern times.
And then we see, actually, that we talked about in our earliest show, that there's never been a safety for us here. At any time, these people can decide that that's going to be something we do again, and to you this time.
Oh, absolutely.
And what control do we have over that, you know?
Yep, zero.
In our own country, the Japanese were not at fault for anything. There was no evidence proving that they were terrorists or that they were cahooting with Japan to do anything against America. It's just the simple fact that our president at the time was ill-advised, and popular culture and opinion
fear
led him to doing that to people.
Fear.
Over 120,000 people inside these camps.
Many of them
inside
born.
Of the American country.
Many of them born here in America. I mean, isn't that had to sell their homes? I mean, had to sell their properties. And then they made them, this is what's so crazy. They made them, like, produce their own food. I mean, you know, you take me out of my house. You put
take
me
my
in a
business
camp.
Away.
Oh, yeah, take my business away. And you put them in this, like, and they were like tents, okay? And they had to farm the land.
They had the people living
food.
In stables, man.
Yeah, some of them were in stables. Oh, absolutely. It's, I mean, so when we think about the shaping of identity, folks, believe it or not, all of this affects us. Where we from which we have come determines where we are at now, determines how we view the world. And so when you talk about moving back, you talk about after slavery, convict leasing system. A lot of people don't know about this convict leasing system.
You know what? And I did not know to the extent of it before you and I had discussed these articles and these publications that came out about it. A long time it went on before anything was done about it, was said about it. People's lives simply destroyed behind it.
I mean, it was a continuation of slavery, right? I mean, let's just be honest. It was a continuation. You know, a lot of people thought the 13th Amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, but no. The convict leasing system began in Alabama in 1846 and lasted until July 1st, 1928.
Wow. Okay. So it's over 80 years?
Yes. Okay. 10% of Alabama's total revenue was derived from convict leasing. 10%. Okay.
And they said just a short while after, that had bumped up to 73%.
Oh, absolutely.
So a state taking just 10%, just a few years later, now this is all where all the money is coming from, pretty much.
And you know what's so crazy? When we talk about, and again, we can make a connection, right? We make the connection from the convict leasing system to mass incarceration today, where you have private prisons where black and brown bodies are revenue streams for what? For stockholders. Okay? Private prisons. If I don't have people in my prison, I don't make money.
Right. And okay. Now they've set it up to where they've they've guaranteed that there's going to be somebody to fill those spots.
Oh, yeah. It looked like me and you. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just be honest, you know. And here, you know, said in 1873, 25% of all black lease convicts died.
Wow.
25%.
In comparison to prisons that were not convict lease, that was almost 10 times higher
absolutely.
Than any other place.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about the end of slavery, and then we're not going to even go into sharecropping. It's a whole nother topic we could spend on that. But at the end of slavery, when you think about it, you get this convict leasing system, means that corporations, okay, can if you get arrested, which you can get arrested for anything, mm-hmm. okay, even if you didn't have a job, you could get arrested. People don't realize that. They could ask you, were you employed? If you were not, you could get arrested for not having a job. So they would arrest you. Then they would lease you out to corporations and other organizations to make money off of you.
And it was hard work, too. Man.
It was hard work. Working in the mines.
On the mines. Had them out there on the railroad.
Yes.
The chain gang was made popular behind convict leasing.
Oh, absolutely. And people
and
don't know this.
You see movies all the time. I've been working on the railroad.
Yeah, they laughing yeah, and smiling, like, huh? Mm. No, it wasn't like that. Mm. It wasn't like that. It was brutal. Brutal. And there was no oversight. Right. I mean, many of these convicts were beaten, tortured for the amusement of the guards.
Mm-hmm. Put together the fight to the death sometimes.
Oh, absolutely, for amusement. Mm-hmm. Okay, we kind of saw that in what was that movie with Jamie Foxx?
Django.
Yeah, Django. Uh-huh. We saw that. Mm-hmm. You know, amusement. So again, folks, this has to do with shaping American identity, which in turn will shape our identity, because we are part of the American experience. Now, let's talk about here a minute. Let's kind of go down. So we talked about convict leasing. You know, listen, this Jim Crow, mm-hmm. Jim Crow, another system put in place to subjugate black and brown people. Okay. So a system that is designed to favor one group over the other, to separate the groups totally, but not separate, but equal.
Yeah, you got to use that other bathroom, man.
Oh, yeah. You can't come in the front
door. Just like this one, but a little different. Has a color only sign on it. Right. You find it right on the left, behind the building.
It's the same food, but you got to go in the back to get yours. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's the same bus, but you got to sit in the back, though. Yeah. Okay, it's the same road car, but you got to sit in the back.
A little bit less gas in that
okay.
one, too.
Just and this nice hotel right here, no, you can't stay in it. You got to go stay somewhere else because you're not allowed. You're not wanted. You're not warranted to live in this particular hotel. Yeah. I mean, the
send your kids up the street to that other school.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. You can't attend this affluent, you know, nice, you know, vibrant.
The kids got to write their own books for class.
right. Give them their own pens. Right. And I mean, it's amazing to me that these things have been lost in the American consciousness. Like, this didn't happen. I mean, Brown versus Board of Education was what, 54, right? Mm. I mean,
not too long ago.
George Wallace stood on the steps and said, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. Yeah. Okay.
So, like, in your mind, when do we, I mean, I don't say when do we, because we understand that these things have been a continuation of our experience. But why is it that now we get so surprised, you know, when we see all the stuff happening to us in the news and around the world? It's like, where is the shock coming from?
Exactly.
When this has been the standard pretty much of how they've dealt with us in the past and right now.
It's the standard. And I like how you put that, the standard. It's the way it's always been, folks. That's what people, like you said, why are you shocked? Oh, let's talk about police brutality. People think police brutality is a modern day thing.
Nah. We have camera phones now. That's the only difference.
That's the only go through the history books. Go to the 1960s. Well, we already talked about convict leasing. Okay, law enforcement. Okay, torturing and beating people down.
Like you said, there was no oversight in those situations. So to the extent that people were hurt and brutally injured, we will never know, because
didn't matter.
They had private, secret, burials for these people, or cemeteries,
absolutely,
where they hid the bodies of the people who had been beaten to death, you know, and they didn't account for them.
Absolutely. How could you communicate? There was no cell phone, no internet, no really no. Everybody went walking around with a camera on, an audio device on them. I mean, when you disappeared, you disappeared. You were gone. And so you police brutality has always been there. You can trace it throughout American history. If you really drop it in the 60s, when you look at these riots that were in Watts, Chicago, Newark, when you look at Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you look at Detroit, I guarantee you, folks, go look it up. I guarantee you, one, if not the most classic complaint of these people that were being oppressed in these urban societies was police brutality. Police brutality. Man, I'm doing my research now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Police brutality. Milwaukee did not have no mechanism for reporting police brutality. Matter of fact, it went.
But look, is that a statistic that is being carried by law enforcement agencies?
Well, they carry some of them, but not all the data. They don't depend on how they report it, you see. But back in those days, they didn't even have a mechanism for reporting it. It went to the chief. And the chief, basically, there was not one out of all the complaints they had. Not one person was held accountable. I can guarantee you, look at Ferguson. When you look at Ferguson, they're talking about how the citizens were used for a revenue stream and started being pulled over. And what? Brutality. You might say, well, what's the definition of brutality? Okay, I'm going to beat you over the head, this, that, and the other thing. Well, yeah, that might be one form of it. But if you're harassing me, if every time I turn around, you forcing me, you giving me a citation that forces me to pay money that I don't have and I'm being locked up, that's not brutality? Okay? It's the same thing. It's the same thing that is happening today that has always been happening in our country, DT.
Man, you know what I heard somebody say the other day? We had a family member of ours turning 84. And, I mean, to me, that's a pretty long life, you know. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend of mine, you know, say, man, you know what? I don't even know if I want to live that long.
Wow.
Considering what we go through every day here. And what a life for another 50 years in this condition would be like. That was heavy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody want to have a long and healthy life, you know, but at what cost if it's not going to be worth anything?
Well, I think it's, and again, we're talking about, do you really know who you are? I can understand what the brother's saying. Mm. Okay. I can truly wrap my mind around that dismal outlook on life, especially what we're talking about today. The real America. But we persevere. We move on. We are
survivors.
have to be. And there has to be some thanksgiving in your heart simply because you have life. But I understand. I understand that struggle. Okay. Because being black in America is not the most. I don't see a lot of people trying to fill out their job application to be black in America. Okay,
I mean, it takes in some things from our culture to identify with, but not just to wear the skin.
So civil rights. We saw what happened with the struggle for civil rights. That I think became the moral compass of our society. It began to point people. Not just it make that connection between the past, the present, and where we wanted to go to in the future. Mm-hmm. It began to be the moral compass, and we still whether it's gay rights or whether it's immigrants' rights. You know, everybody taps into the methodology of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. Okay, because it was a righteous movement.
Promoting some type of change.
Promoting change. Not the type of change that says, now we're going to be superior, mm-hmm. you're going to be inferior, but it's type of change that said we all need to sit down at the table, brother and sisterhood. That's what type of change civil rights was trying to bring. And like last week, we talked about, you know, not it's evil twin, as yeah. some had, right? That some had called the Black Power Movement. So we talked about that. You talked about from, what did Malcolm say?
Stop singing and start swinging. Right. Yeah, he's not about that. We shall overcome. Right. He's about action.
Right. Yeah. So that even the Black Power Movement and how that has shaped the American society and the American identity and even Black identity. And we're just hitting on the
we're
surface.
Just scratching on it.
We want to paint a picture for you of the American landscape from which we have traveled. And now, when we come back, DT, we're going to go deeper.
All right.
We'll be right back. Bye.
Hi, everyone. This is Roxy Davis.
And this is Deborah Burris. And we are
the Roxy by Design Show. Our show is designed to bring healing as we share our stories while God redesigns our lives.
So take a ride with us.
So you can find us at
Podbean, iTunes,
Facebook and Twitter,
and
blackandstudios.com. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the Roxy by Design Show. You have a blessed day.
And we love you.
This is Dr. Paul Ketchum, and I fully support One Mic, One Voice, and I recommend you do the same.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, I'm still kind of caught up in the theme song, man.
That was beautiful,
man.
I'm
like, man, let's play it again, man. Like, can we just go back to
put it on the repeat, huh?
Just keep it going, because you know I've been wearing it out. To be honest with you, man, I am so thrilled over that. And again, we just appreciate, you know, music is a beautiful thing. And music can express.
Liberating, man.
Yes, it is. Mm. Can express what simple words cannot. Mm. Words put to music can soothe a weary soul. Mm.
Speak directly to your soul. Sometime.
Absolutely.
Like, man.
If it's done correctly.
But you know what? Music, man, to me is a sign of that connectedness that we all have, you know.
Yes.
And how music, that one thing, join so many people together, you know,
universal. Like
it's a spirit in it, you know.
Yeah, it is, man. So you're gonna be hearing that more, and as we say in the vernacular, more and mo. Children, let's talk about. So we have talked about from a very kind of, I think, macro level of American identity. Let's talk about the child that has been brought into on the micro level, but still affected by the macro level, has been brought into this world that begins that socialization process. Let's talk about the child and what affects the child. Do you really know you? What has affected you? What have you been exposed to in your life that has shaped who you are? What truth or lies have you been told? Something else.
Like my mom is like, but you know what? I have to be thankful for my parents, you know, because what you're talking about is children being able to navigate the world, but based on whatever principles or whatever ideas or whatever beliefs that the parent holds in the household, but in a larger sense, how those parents related to the society. And so the child is only a reflection of those things How did their parents relate to this racist society that we live in, mm-hmm. and having to have a child in a society that have to deal with those things? Mm-hmm. And so he will be shaped by these different experiences that he has or she has as a result of whatever is going on in the war, in the larger scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, environment. Wow. I mean, kids are, I mean, they are blank canvas. They're Tyler blank Raza. Canvas. And when you have a child, the brush is in your hand, and you begin to paint that picture for that child. And whatever picture you paint initially will be that child's reality.
Right. Because we know those first few years are when the child is developing who it will be for the rest of his life. And over time, we had talked about this, you know, as adults, we have some choice about who we want to become, what we want to do. But as a child, a lot of those things are out of your control. So as the adults, like you said, we have to be painting a certain type of picture for this child to feel a certain way in dealing with the things that we have to deal with on an everyday basis.
Exactly. I mean, the vulnerability of the child and the lack of love given or the amount of love given, the lack of patience exhibited or the lack thereof. All of this is teaching our children how to navigate in a society. You take a child, you sit them down in front of video games, and that's all they play is violent video games. That becomes their reality. Mm. You let them sit on the internet all day long and they talking with their friends. That's their reality. Just like if you take them to church and you stick the Bible in front of them, you make them read the Bible. That's their reality. Folks, we have to understand, as you said, DT, these are critical, critical years of shaping who these young people are. And let me tell you something. In many instances, parents have failed these young people.
Okay. I mean, yeah, definitely. But why? Why have they failed them?
Because they don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. Okay, see, that's what we're trying to get to. If you don't know who you are, how are you going to shape the reality of someone else?
You know what? There are things that people do, right, to kind of change the way they look. The little cosmetic things, you may get an implant here or there.
I ain't gonna get no implant, bro.
But the personality too is sometimes an implant, you know. Your character is sometimes an implant, you know. There are a lot of things going on, but some parts of yourself are implanted, not in your control. So when we're talking about the children, those things that have been implanted into those children, whether they're right or wrong, are going to be a part of that child.
Yeah.
And whatever it's going to take to get that child out of that, or for him to see himself or himself and make some decisions on his own, those are going to be a part of his personality, yeah, part of his character, part of who he is. And we have to be careful about those implants that we're putting into the children.
Yeah. So well put. Damage. Could the child be damaged? Could the child that's walking in the school already be damaged goods?
Are we damaged as parents? Have we dealt with our own damage?
Is the parent damaged and putting damage into the child that's walking in the classroom damaged, and the teacher's reinforcing the damage?
Is the teacher damaged?
Is the teacher damaged?
Yeah, is the society damaged? Everything, you know,
absolutely.
There are things that are connecting all these things, you know, and we have to be able to look at the framework in which we're dealing with it to be able to define as a family who and what we are. Where do we see ourselves going? How do we set the standards for ourselves to know whether or not we're gravitating towards that or deviating from that thing?
So a child has no choice on who their parents are, what race they are, what gender, what geography they are born in. They have no choice. But, DT, we take this individual that has no power over any of those determinants that I talked to you about, and we make them either inferior or superior based upon those things that they don't control.
Right.
Not gifts, not talents, not hard work, not, no. Just on the things.
Yeah, just because you're here, it's time. Yeah, it's a problem.
a huge problem. Yeah. It's silliness for us to still be grappling with this idea of a superior race versus everybody else. Nobody had any input. I don't know about you, man. I can't go back that far to birth, but I don't believe the creator said to me, well, what would you like to be?
Yes.
You like to be a black man, a white man, a woman?
Man, you probably did tell me you wanted those green eyes, huh?
Man, I can't take credit for that, man. That was master somewhere down in the gene pool that took Sister Jane from the cotton field and took her up in the big house and did some damage to her, and then it came on down through the gene pool. I'm just gonna keep it real, right? yeah, we call them pretty eyes.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's just like you're saying, we have no control over those things. Those determinants that make us who we are going to be who we are, regardless of what ourselves or anybody else thinks about it. And it's sad that those are the things that we don't control, but are most analyzed over, most criticized over.
Yeah.
Most analyzed, you know, these little things that are not even getting yet to what our talents are, what our abilities are, but being a male, female, black, white, Hispanic, you know, whatever. Those are going to be some key things that identify you just right off the bat.
We are judged by our outward appearance first. Okay, you meet somebody, the first thing you know, the black male, tall, play sports. Okay, right. The guy was a basketball player. I bet
had to be.
Okay, so already the judgment has set off, okay? Some will look and say, he's black. He can't be as smart as me. Mm-hmm. Can't be as talented as me. Must have grew up poor, okay? The assumptions, right, starts right off the bat. Have not gotten to, as you said.
Thug.
Oh, yeah. I can look at him and tell.
Gang.
Look at him. Look the way he talks.
Member.
Oh, absolutely. Look at him. Yeah,
he probably, man, it's like they pick what side of town you come from. Yeah, he probably grew up on the east side.
Yeah, right. Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm a little south side kid.
Yeah, south side. See, everybody can't be like Richard growing up, you know, in a mansion.
Yeah, in Beverly Hills.
And all.
Man, this cat right here, man. Why do we even come here?
Black royalty. But, you know, the building blocks for identity are gender, race, ethnicity, and experiences. The first three are determinants, yet we somewhat have control over our experiences in our adulthood. And we're gonna get to that point here in a minute. But these things we have no say so.
No control.
Over. And you know, we learn to be who we are, you know, really through our socialization process. And the problem with not knowing who you are is because you have learned to be who you are through the eyes of others.
Right. And we've talked about this before, language, and how important that is, because it's been the thing that's been used to identify people. And that's how we identify ourselves, by what people call us or don't call us, you know, how they include us in language or don't include us in the language. And so if you know, I feel like if you really, I guess we'll get into this later, but are really, really looking to define yourself, you need to look at language and see what it is about it that helps you get a clearer picture of who you are by your own terms.
Mm-hmm. By your own terms. That's what's
not
deep.
Not what somebody else told you or said about you, or is trying to define you based on what they feel.
Exactly. And society as large telling you that you're not beautiful. Okay, you're not smart because you didn't grow up in a certain area. Okay, because you don't look like those in the dominant culture, or You don't wear the nicest things, or you don't drive the nicest car. The materialism in which we judge, I would say, favorable identity. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's rich. He's got a lot of money. Oh, yeah, he's a wonderful person. What does that have to do with the condition of a person's heart or the wealth or the value of the individual? How can that be measured by some type of monetary thing? I mean, when we're talking about what's happening within, not what's going on outside of you. See, what's going on outside of you is shaping you. What should be shaping you is what's going on inside of you. Because what's going on inside eventually will work itself to the outside. And then you can start influencing other people instead of being influenced by everything that comes your way. Man,
that was beautiful, man.
Man, listen,
I'm gonna
grab
a Kleenex. Man,
it's the song, man. It's the song that got me like focused, man. It's got me fired up, folks. And listen, we're gonna take a break, and we're gonna be right back.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice, and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher, where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show.
For our listeners who are locked in, this is just part one of a series we're going to be doing on Do You Really Know Who You Are? And we'll get deeper. You know, this is just a teaser, if you will, into the conversation that we're going to have about identity, about self-acceptance, about the self in general. So stay tuned with us. We got a lot of great things coming up for you next week. Digging deeper into the self and into our identity.
Deeper and deeper. Man, listen, I put something on Facebook. Okay, I'm going to deviate for a minute. I'm just going to deviate for a minute. this one.
No, this is a positive thing or?
No. this one got less response. If you have not seen it on the One Mic, One Voice page, I put an article up there titled Black on Black Crime is Black Terrorism, and I want you to read it. I've gotten a little feedback. Over 500 people have read it, but I've gotten very little feedback. The feedback that I've gotten, you know, has been truth, deep, need to be said. I can't add anything to it, but I value your opinion. Go out there, take a look at it. We talked about black on black crime. We've talked about it multiple times. But folks, I believe we need to start calling it black terrorism. If you got a problem with that, just send me an email. Hit me on Facebook. I value your opinion, but read the article. I'm not gonna say anything else, DT, about it. Read the article and then get back with us. It's a conversation we need to continue to have. So from a child into young adult. Okay. So the child begins the formation of identity, determining who you are and what you are and how you fit within a given culture, group, society, definition of identity. If you haven't got my book, you might want to pick it up. Okay. It's out there. Yes, I Am Who I Am, A New Philosophy of Black Identity. Applies to all people. So this idea of moving to a different level in your progress for understanding who you are, young adult. Okay, and what I mean by young adult, I'm talking you're almost there. You know, I'm not talking middle school. I'm talking you're almost there. You might getting ready to graduate from college, or getting ready to get into college, and you know, you're almost there. You're 17, 18. That's what I'm talking about, okay? Now you get out into the real world. Right? You know, get away from mama, daddy, the old neighborhood. But what about those who never leave?
You know what? in talking about this kind of transition of childhood into young adulthood, into adulthood, we find some very interesting things. And what you just said is that as a child, these things that you've experienced, that you've gone through, that you've seen, that you've encountered, and you grow older and your experience are kind of more the same, there aren't a lot of times for you to really see yourself growing or growing up. And so you may still be that child as a young adult, trying to deal with things in an adult manner, but from a childish kind of perspective, a mentality of a child. And so that makes it a lot difficult for people trying to navigate the world from this mindset of still being a child, not leaving the home, not having the opportunity to grow as an individual, as an adult with responsibility. You just find more people who are like big kids, you know?
That is a great point. That is a great point. And I'm going to say there are parents out there that still treat their grown kids, their adult children, like they are children. Okay, they don't talk to them like this is a man or this is a woman that is grown now, and I need to respect those boundaries. And what happens is this person goes out into the world, they still think that they're in that same condition.
I'm mama's boy.
I'm a mama's boy. Okay, and the world will eat you up because
you can't
it's a
run
difficult
to mama every time.
You cannot run to mama, and mama cannot save you like she used to. The immaturity of and when we get to adulthood, we'll talk about kind of this tension that exists between individuals simply because of things that have happened or didn't happen in
and
their path.
And when we're trying to be adults, dealing with other adult people, we have to consider that, that there may be things along the way that they didn't learn, that they didn't have to necessarily involve themselves with, that take them out of your experience. And you see yourself come into a disagreement because of that reason, because this person was not parented just like you were. And then you have, you know, these little odds that are like, okay, well, yeah, of course, we were not brought up the same way. But can we as adults figure out what it is that we have to do or have to say to come to some agreement or understanding?
Yeah, I mean, it's all connected, as you have said so many times. The young person that has never left Oklahoma. Never left the East Side.
No, plenty of them.
How can they know who they are? They have had no
actualize their full potential.
Absolutely, they've had no experiences outside of their surroundings. You know, one thing we have talked about in our extensive traveling that we've seen different cultures. We've seen and had relationships with people outside of our own circles. What that teaches a person is respect and understanding of people that are not like you. Engaging with individuals that are not like you.
It was a very beautiful thing for me to be able to go to St. Gregory's University and be really thrown into a different culture altogether, you know, from the religion to the types of people that were there, people representing every country in the world. We shared a love for ping pong, you know, and so now
I'm about to get you on the table, bro.
I'm
about to get you on the table, bro. I got this serve. Man, I got this one that spins.
My serve is killer, man.
If you don't get out the way, it'll burn your forehead when it hits you.
But so, yeah, I was able to gain new knowledge about different countries just from playing ping pong with other people, you know, and it's like we're making a joke about it. Now we're going to the ping pong table like, yes, it's Africa versus Brazil, or, you know, it's just like it's funny. But, you know, we learn how to respect each other and how to open up to having conversations because we shared that one thing in common. And that was enough to build a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how getting out of your own comfort zone, your own surroundings.
When we play, I'm putting it on Facebook, though.
Oh, yeah, we can put it on Facebook. Matter of fact, we can go live. Yeah, we go Facebook live, Richard. You might have to, I don't know if you can. Can you move the camera that quick? Okay. they might be dizzy trying to watch it. I'd be like, I scored. Yeah, no, you didn't score. Yeah, I did. But, you know, it's I think about people that lack the experience for growth. Let's call it that. The experience to grow. And when you don't have, is it necessary? Yes, it is. It is a lie that you can be born in one place, stay in that place for all of your life, never interact with anyone outside of your circle, and expect to truly know who you are. That's a lie. It is through experiences that we challenge what we learned, okay? What mama, daddy taught us, what the preacher taught us, this, that, and that. It is through those experiences where we go, man, think about the person. Let me tell you something. I had a gentleman that worked for me in the military. He got there. He was prejudiced. I didn't know that. I mean, he was, I forget where he was from, but he was prejudiced, and he was disgusted that he's working for a black man. Never told me that. When he got ready to lead a ship, me and him had a conversation. He said, Michael, let me tell you something. When I got to this boat, I hated black people. He said, but as I leave, I respect no one in my life like I respect you.
Wow.
It was our experience that changed him and who he was and how he looked at himself. That growth, that experience gave him growth. And what I'm saying to people that are just stuck, won't get out of that comfort zone, won't move out, won't interact, even here in Oklahoma City, won't go to the South Side and go to the grocery store, won't even go, you know what I mean, won't go to Norm and look at Moore like Moore is some foreign land or something, will not interact, you will never find out who you are because you lack the experiences too.
Wow.
Why is college so important? People say, well, what? Why is college so important? People say, well, you know, I don't need. No. You are forced in college to deal with folks not like you.
Exactly.
Okay. And then you start learning, well, what, man, he's just like me. And they start looking at you and say, oh, yeah, he's just like me. It begins to break down those walls of division that you've been taught through your socialization process. Okay.
Some of the teaching been so heavy, though, man. It's hard for people to come out of that mind frame.
It is.
I even think about, you know, people who are young adults searching themselves to find out how they can separate what they've been taught from everything else that they've learned. And it's like I'm looking in my brain. I don't even find that information. I don't even see the possibility of difference in my mind. So where do I start to build up that like you said, experience of growth?
And you know what? We're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. We're going to give some pointers on where you start, and we're going to wind the show on down.
This is Richard Taplin, host of the Black Box Podcast. Wanted to tell you, thanks again for listening to the One Mic, One Voice. Please be sure to check out their Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. And while you're on Facebook, go ahead and stop by Blacken Studios. Also, check out our website, blackenstudios.com, to find all the podcasts that record here, including the One Mic, One Voice Show, the Black Box, the Elijah Bailey Show, the Roxy by Design Show, and also the Gamer Stand Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support, and remember, it's Blacken.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice Show. That you are so correct. Where do I start? Well, you know, it's such a difficult question because I believe everybody needs a mentor in their life. I think that the tragedy of young people is that they're trying to navigate through society by themselves. Mm-hmm. Whether the home is broken down or there's a single parent home, pops is not there. They don't have that person in their life. So I would say seek out a mentor, someone that you respect, someone that you can learn and grow from. Mm-hmm. And then you have to just put yourself in these situations. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities to go to camp. There's plenty of opportunities to, if you can get in college, you can go overseas and, you know, you study abroad program. There are opportunities. You yourself, you met, you know, folks from the continent that say, hey, let's go back to Africa. Mm-hmm. You have to make yourself available. You know, this is something that you must take initiative on. There is no, like, you know, this answer and everything is great. No. Part of the responsibility is on you. Right. You know, I went to college for a year, couldn't afford, so I went into the military. You know, I went in the Navy for 13 years. I had the opportunity to travel, you know, throughout the world. I'm very, very thankful for that opportunity. Met all types of people. It opened up my world. A man to the 100th degree, you know what I'm saying, from a kid that came from the inner side of Milwaukee, 3155 North 16th. Don't go to the house. I don't live there no more. Okay. But from a small, you know, I think worldview to global, okay, because I've been there. I've done that. That's the opportunities we have to seek out, and our young people must take that initiative. And we should all be mentors. Mm-hmm. We should all be mentors for our young people, understanding that they're still trying to discover who we are. But we got to know who we are.
We also need to find mentorship within our families, within our friendships, because the people closest to us need help too. And sometimes we find ourselves reaching out even more to the people that are more distant from our lives and people that are actually right there with us every day.
Yeah.
I don't know how you know, whatever you're going through with your family members, but to find a way, a platform to be able to build up some type of progressive thought, some progressive conversation that is going somewhere, like I said before, where you can see yourself either deviating or actualizing this thing.
Yeah, I like that word, actualization. You know, you have to, I think it's important that understanding who you are is, I think, the challenge that we all face. And I think we continue to discover, if we're looking, new things about who we are and how they relate to old things. Mm. We're going to talk about that when we get to adulthood, how the new things that I discover are connected to some of the old things in which was said to me, done to me, that plays a role in my adult life and in our adult life. But if you are not trying to discover who you are, then you will never find yourself, because history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many we became one? Or would she find that we solve nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.